I had a dream where I stole a bunch of peanut butter and then made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and ate it in front of the person I stole, and I felt really bad the whole time.
And then you got salmonella.
God, you are without shame.
Oh, hi, and welcome to episode 166 of the PC Gamer Podcast for February 26th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and with me today in the mobile recording studio of the future U.S. Dassault Falcon 7X executive jet en route to Istanbul, our reviews editor, Dan Stapleton.
I thought we had to sell our private jet.
Shh. Associate editor, Evan Lottie.
I think I prefer the X-Men's Blackbird experimental jet for...
Intern Josh Augustine.
I'm just happy to have Girl Scout cookies.
Podcast producer and peanut butter and jelly sandwich eater, Andy Bauman.
I still haven't created the peanut butter jelly. At Mach 3, it's hard to get the peanut butter to stick to the bread.
Well, first of all, to address Dan Stapleton's concerns, we did not use any of the stimulus funds to purchase this jet, so therefore, it's okay.
Gotcha.
First up, a dispatch from the world of science, where researchers have released grave evidence that violent media, including video games, causes people to become, quote, comfortably numb, unquote, to the suffering of others. In a study performed by University of Michigan professor Brad Bushman and his trusty sidekick, Professor Craig Anderson of Iowa State, people leaving a violent movie took 25% longer to help a woman struggling with a pair of crutches than people who had watched a non-violent movie. Unfortunately, not cited in the press release was that the difference was 6.89 seconds versus 5.46 seconds, as reported by the TechDirt.com website.
Yeah, that's a really stupid study.
Holy smokes.
Really stupid study.
But the callousness is just, it's spine-tingling, isn't it? It just makes your skin grow cold.
Besides which, that's another correlation versus causation study. I mean, that has nothing to do with anything.
Exactly.
I don't understand how these people can call themselves scientists.
The press release is just breathless in its condemnation of violent media. Like, oh my goodness, look what's happening. And the gamer side, they were saying that they had staged a fight in which somebody got a sprained ankle, and people who were playing violent video games took 76 seconds to help the person with the sprained ankle, whereas people who were playing nonviolent video games took only 16 seconds, which is, you know, a substantial difference here, right? However, also not included in the press release was that only 25% of the nonviolent video gamers even bothered to respond, and only 21% of the violent video gamers responded. So basically, only one in four or five people even bothered to do anything.
Right. How big is the sample size? Who are these people? What's their background?
It's just kind of pathetic, you know.
Right. This is not a study. This is a farce.
They're breath comfortably numb. Right. So I've been trying to think in the past week of ways in which I've become comfortably numb to the suffering of others.
Listening to Pink Floyd might do it.
Yes, that's true. It's absolutely true. Driving with people is, you know, driving on the highways here. You know, you can be comfortably numb to the suffering of just about everybody.
You know, it's studies like this that contributed to California's game law just being totally thrown out. There was a law passed in 2005 that had been in constant legal challenge since then, and it was just tossed out by the courts because the courts found that that the backers failed to establish any kind of causal relationship between playing violent games and violent behavior. And it's because of stupid studies like this that they're citing that are just completely irrelevant. They're not convincing.
I guess we know who's comfortably numb on staff here.
I'm very comfortable, thank you.
Well, the golden years of Apogee Games are coming to good old games, GOG.com, beginning with Duke Nukem Atomic Edition, which goes on sale today, for $6, which is less than you'd pay for a lunch at McDonald's, and a hell of a lot tastier, if you ask me. And in fact, I can't remember. How long ago was that?
Oh, geez.
What? Between what?
Duke Nukem?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like 11 years.
It was 90.
Oh.
And we're talking Duke Nukem 3D, not the side-scroller original.
Yeah, yeah. This is the one everybody loves.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth picking up. And the nice thing about it is with GOG, they go and they make a custom DOS box wrapper for you so that so you can run it on any OS, any Windows OS, without tweaking all your settings and having resolution problems and everything. It's a very smooth experience.
Yeah, I'm hoping multiplayer will be equally smooth. Norm and I were talking about trying it at lunch today. Came out in 1996, by the way. Sorry.
That's one thing. Multiplayer is one thing that they can't always get working. I think with Fallout Tactics on there, you can't use the multiplayer because of the way it was set up initially, and it just doesn't work now. So I wouldn't count on multiplayer working, but it may very well. It'll tell you in GOG.com. They'll give you a notice if something's not working.
Okay, I was looking at the extra stuff you get with the package, and it says it comes with Duke SMS tones.
What?
I don't. What is an SMS? Is it just me? Am I the only one who doesn't know what an SMS tone is?
Maybe like a text message.
It's for a cell phone.
Reminder? Like,
well, yeah, it's obviously for a cell phone, but I don't know exactly what an SMS tone would be.
I think, well, GOG's a British company. Maybe that's kind of the regional term for something, for ringtones, I guess.
Could be, I guess.
Oh, I didn't know they were British. I couldn't tell from their accent. Looking at the website.
Well, they're owned by
one person thought that was funny. One.
I was like, I was actually considering that. I was like, oh yeah, he's right.
God, what a disappointment. $6 though.
Aren't they actually Polish? Sorry. Or no? Is it CD Projekt that does it?
Yeah, they're owned by CD Projekt. So and CD Projekt, I believe, is Polish,
as indicated by the K in CD Projekt.
Exactly.
They can't spell project. That's
yeah.
That's a key dead giveaway for Polish people.
It's true.
So that, you know, there's a recession buster for you right there. $6. You know, you could spend it at McDonald's for 5 minutes, or you know, play Duke Nukem 3D for hours and hours and hours, and become comfortably numb. Unfortunately, there's probably not a lot of fun going down at Funcom today, as the company just reported a nearly $34 million loss this year, and Age of Conan subscribers have fallen below 100,000, down from a lofty 700,000, believe less than a year ago.
And that number—I don't know if that number is scientific at all. I think that's just from some analyst at a
one? The first one or the second one?
No, the 100,000 subscriber number.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm not sure if that's exactly accurate, because it was coming from an analyst, sort of like, you know, a market analyst in the area. But the thing that I'm worried about is Ragnar Tornquist and his game Lost World or Secret World. I'm wondering if Funcom's going to pull the plug on that.
Yeah, that sounds like a number probably pulled from MMOGChart.com, which is a site run by Bruce Woodcock, which, you know, don't laugh at his name. He's a very serious analyst. He compiles a bunch of MMO information based on, you know, some inside sources and also a lot of public sources of information, and, you know, gives it his best guess, like the most informed guess you'll find out there. So his numbers are generally pretty close.
Well, the article actually says it's from analyst E24. It looks like a foreign language one. I can't even read it.
The analysts don't have names; they just have numbers over the normal.
well, then those numbers are probably crap. Then
is there a K in the way they spell E24? Did they? Okay, that wasn't any good. Sorry. Go ahead. Please move on, everybody.
But I'm a huge Ragnar Tornquist like fanboy, and I follow him pretty closely. And his blog doesn't seem to, you know, indicate any sort of bad weather in his neck of the woods. But he works for Funcom basically, so I'm wondering if, and he's developing a sort of a massively multiplayer online game. I don't know if it's an RPG called Secret Worlds. And
A $39 million loss sounds like a lot, but I mean, if you look at it next to like EA's loss of, you know, hundreds of millions, I think it was like $200 million they lost.
Oh wow!
In a year. Yeah, I mean it's not a catastrophic loss. Mm-hmm. It's not a good year by any means, but it's not. Sure. They're not going to close their doors.
Okay.
Right?
Cool.
Probably.
And I guess that is in U.S. dollars, whereas it's not as much in euros. So. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same amount of money. It does in a different.
I don't understand.
Right. But yeah, the numbers for Age of Conan are a little discouraging. I know both Conan and Warhammer Online had strong starts, but you know they both petered off quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. When you think about it, when was the last time you heard about any new content coming to that game, though?
Never.
Conan, I don't know. I think they've had some significant patches.
Can you name one? I certainly can. I'm just saying we can think of at least two or so for Warhammer. Since it's come out, and it came out much later, I don't know.
Well, Warhammer hasn't had their first big patch yet, have they? I thought that's not out yet. Josh, is that out yet?
No, but it's going to be out over the next 3 months. So, like, the first bits of it are out.
Yeah, and I'm not up on Conan's patching schedule, but I'm sure they've patched in something. And
the Conan community, the few that are left are very serious, saying that they have improved a whole lot. But I think, I mean, they fixed the bugs and stuff, but I think people just didn't find the game very much fun at the beginning, and I don't think they fixed that with any new classes or anything like that.
That's kind of like a really cynical remark.
The problem that Conan ran into was that they put all of their resources pretty much into developing the first 20 levels of the game and making that like a really, you know, well-crafted experience. But once you get past level 20 and get out into the kind of, you know, wild open spaces, then you have kind of a lack of things to do, lack of compelling quests and lack of good, you know, raids and things like that that keep MMO community strong after the initial strong period. So hopefully they'll be able to reinvigorate it. But I remember reading I think from Jack Emmert, who's one of the higher ups at Cryptic. You know, they did City of Heroes and City of Villains. They're currently working on Champions Online and Star Trek Online, and he was talking about like things they learned from City of Heroes. And one of the things there was like, if you don't launch with a feature, you may as well not have it, because by the time you add it, all the people that want it are gone. So. Like there's not a whole lot of hope, I don't think, for a game that has already lost an audience. Or for example, with City of Heroes, I always confuse Company and City of Heroes. With City of Heroes, they had no PvP combat when they launched, so when they added it later, nobody was all that excited about it because all the people that wanted it are already gone. So if you add a feature to Conan, all the people that like really demanded having that feature have gone off and found a game that already has it.
Are there any examples of somebody who did add a feature that it reinvigorated? I'm trying to think of one. I would like to think that there are, but I can't bring one up. You know, I can't think of somebody who added in something and brought glory to their lands.
I would think that EVE Online might be an example of that. I know they've added some significant features and probably expanded their user base as a result of it. I don't have those figures, so it's...
They saw their largest user base a week or two ago. Ever.
Right.
Yeah.
And they've done some major work on that game. I know that they've added some actual user avatars. Before, the avatar was your ship. Now you have like a character that represents you. And you know, that's like a major feature that they've added in. And I guess you can like walk around on space stations now. Josh, you played it a little.
You can't walk around yet. They aren't even putting that in the next expansion. They'll be coming out sometime this past year, or the next year, sorry. But yeah, they have added a lot of PvP and kind of community tools. Community tools, though, they always had that, so it's kind of making better a feature that already existed. But I think adding the PvP is a really good example of that. I think that's a good call.
Right.
Yeah, the major enhancements with Apocrypha, which they're rolling out online and as a new retail release on March 10th, are wormholes, new solar systems, a new NPC race, a bunch of like epic class structured missions, I guess, and some other stuff. So it should be exciting. They're supposed to be sort of limiting the difficulty curve to encourage new people to jump in.
Yeah, I think that for a smaller MMO like EVE, it's a little bit different than with a big MMO that has a big launch, because with the smaller ones, they you know, travel through word of mouth. News travels through word of mouth anyway, and they expand as people say, hey, this game I'm playing just added this awesome new feature. You might want to try this, and people haven't tried it yet, so they're wanting to give it a shot. Whereas a game like Warhammer or Conan, people all who might have been interested all got caught up in the marketing and tried it out first thing and were disappointed. And you know, it's a lot bigger jump for them, I think, to imagine you know, the game being a whole lot better than it was when they tried it.
Yeah, and with EVE Online, I mean, if it's missing a feature that you want, there's not really another space sci-fi MMO for you to go to. But Conan, I mean, if you didn't like Conan, you could go to War, you could go to WoW. There's plenty of other options that are close enough.
Well, EA is saying that we've learned our lesson on release dates, and I'm wondering if they're what the lesson here really is. They had been talking about the reception for new franchises like Mirror's Edge and Dead Space that they released not quite simultaneously, but pretty close together, and neither game hit its sales projections. And they're saying, well, it's because we shouldn't release them in clusters like they do with movies, you know, where you get
Right. It's not only that they release them in clusters, it's they release them in clusters right around the holidays when everybody is releasing every big game they possibly can, which is just a excellent way to kill a new IP if you're trying to get it some attention.
Mm-hmm. And that, is that true? Isn't there a way to, I mean, you know, like movies do that, but isn't there a way to draw sales out longer beyond just the launch phase? You know,
Not unless you've got a huge marketing budget where you can keep it up after the push. And in which case, I mean, why not just put it out a little earlier, a little later? Yeah. And when you've got more attention, like there aren't like 12 other games competing for the same business.
Yeah. Which is exactly what they're thinking, of course, when they, you know, when they reflect and go, GTA launched in May, Resident Evil comes out in March, that kind of thing.
Right, right. So it's great to see them stagger this out, because there will hopefully be less of a dry period. I mean, last year we had a period of like 5 or 6 issues where like there were maybe 2 editor's choice games during that entire stretch. Yeah. That was miserable. I hope we see some bigger games launching during the summer months.
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like it would be obvious not to release a game like Command & Conquer Red Alert on the same day that Fallout 3 is coming out. You know,
yeah, the guys from when they came out here to show us Uprising, they were talking about that. They saw that was coming out on the same day, and they're like, "Oh man!" I mean, at least in their case, you know, that those are two very different games. You know, they've got their own niche. You know, art role playing slash you know shooter and RTS. So, like, there's some overlap there in who's interested in them. Like, I play both, but they each have their own separate audiences, so I don't know if that like hurt it, but it didn't help it, that's for sure.
It's just common sense, man.
Yeah, you would think.
I'm definitely jonesing for the sequel to Dead Space, however. I loved that game. That game left me feeling more beautifully comfortably numb than I think any other game I can think of.
I thought it was very atmospheric. I thought the shooting the body parts instead of just aiming for the head all the time was cool. My experience was tainted by the really obnoxious V-Sync bug.
That was horrible. That was really, really horrible. And if that puts you off the game, try it again, please, people.
Yeah, I am gonna have to try it again because you know, if you didn't catch this, like, by default V-Sync is on when you install the game, so. But on the PC, there's a really obnoxious bug where it seems to slow down your mouse a little bit. There's like a fraction of a second of a delay, and in a game
utterly
like that,
noticeable, yeah.
Yeah, in a game like that where you have to target different alien limbs, it's really, really hampers the experience when you're trying to aim a lot. And you know, I still had a great time with it, even though I suffered through that, because you know, when you're trying to figure out why your mouse is lagging, is the first thing you're going to do go turn off VSync? No. So I didn't figure that out until after our review ran, but I still enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah,
the plot wasn't great, I didn't think.
Oh, I liked the plot. It was, you know,
It was very Doom 3. It was very similar to Doom 3 in you know, the kind of occult slash conspiracy slash whatever. You know, it was along the same lines. So I would say don't play it for the plot, but play it for the action.
Play it for the comfortably numb violence.
Let me get your guys' opinion on this really quick. So you know how this has kind of become de facto in PC gaming, where the PC version of a game a la Mirror's Edge comes out much later, like not during the holidays? What kind of effect positively on the PC sales do you think that had? Or do you think they should have just put that out even in the holiday cluster mess?
There is no positive effect on the PC for releasing the same game later on our platform. And they do it because they are afraid of piracy.
Yeah.
Because it is easier to pirate games on PC than it is on consoles. They're not trying to help the PC there, and they're not helping.
No, they're not at all, I don't think.
And in some cases, they do it because they put all their resources into getting the console versions ready first, and then the PC version, they take everybody and put them on that afterwards, which, you know, is just a matter of, you know, how many resources they have, how soon can they get it out, you know. It's so, again, not prioritizing the PC is not helping it.
Yeah. I think it was Alex St. John who a while back he was saying that, you know, that's what consoles are. They are giant DRM keys, and that's what they're for, and that's why publishers love them. Even though that's weakening these days, but, you know, that will always be true. You know, I never liked gamepads anyway. So, didn't know you hang out with Oscar winners? Well, maybe you do, because a WoW guild leader won an Oscar in this year's Academy Awards. Did he not? His name's Steve Preig.
I thought you were going to say, like, if you have an Indian friend, he was probably in Slumdog Millionaire.
No, he would be your customer service rep, not your MMO.
Absolutely.
Oh, too soon.
Oh.
So Steve Preig is a visual effects artist, and he worked on movies including Lord of the Rings trilogy, iRobot, and he won an Oscar this year for his work on The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. He's also a guild leader on World of Warcraft. Josh, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I was actually looking at it earlier this week. His character is intense. He's not just a guild leader, like, he's a guild leader. He's the leader of a guild that's basically done everything in the game. He has all the achievements for, like, the epic bosses. He has completely epic gear. Like, this guy is intense.
How does he have time to make movies?
Well, he doesn't make movies, just visual effects artists, so I imagine it's kind of on and off.
That's part of making movies. And how do you have time to have a day job that takes more than, you know, 2 hours a day if you're doing every single quest in WoW?
Well, he's got, you know, WoW on one screen, and he's touching up Brad Pitt on the other. You know, click, 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 you know. You could probably use just a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. I don't know the nature of visual effects.
The story I read about it said that he runs a progression guild. What's a progression guild?
It basically means kind of a hardcore guild that's interested in hitting the newest content right away and being, you know, like world first to down this one boss. Mm-hmm. So it means a very serious guild. Whereas, you know, guilds might just be friendly guilds, or they might just show up and kind of, you know, raid if they have time. But mm-hmm. progression guilds are the hardcore ones.
They're okay. The unfriendly guilds.
Yes.
Is there a equivalent in life? You know, do we deal with progression guilds all the time? You know, I don't know. I can't think of anything.
No, yeah, it'd be like the annoying rent-a-cops that think they're a big deal, and like if you try and do anything, they're like, "Whoa, that doesn't fly by these rules."
Oh yeah. Okay. We know those people.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just take things a little too seriously.
Who booed Benjamin Button?
That would be me.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
I haven't seen it. Now, this year, I didn't see any of the nominees for Best Picture.
None? Not one?
None, yeah. Nope.
I think I'm in that same boat with you, which is not good.
I got them all queued up on Netflix for when they eventually come out on DVD, but nope, didn't see one.
The movie industry.
Yeah, after I saw that gross wrinkly baby on the previews, I was like, no way, no thanks.
Yeah, that was a horror beyond imagination. I mean,
Why would something like that win visual effects over, say, Iron Man? I don't know.
Because it's hard to make all those wrinkles.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the process, there's certain videos and stuff online that go over what they did. It is actually kind of innovative compared to, you know, just animation work.
Right, but nobody cares about the process. I mean, it's a lot like with a game. Nobody cares how much work went into creating a game.
I do.
Only care.
Wait, oh my god, that voice, I want to sample it. And I want to create a whole song around that voice. Do it again.
As I was saying before I was interrupted by the scary voice, nobody cares how much work went into a game. If it's not fun, they don't, you know, it's not going to win any awards. You know, it's not going to win your gaming dollars, for example, or your attention. It's you know, and we hear this a lot of time from developers. It's like when we pan a game, it's like, well, we spent the last two or three years of our lives on this game, and you know, how can you dismiss all that effort? It's like, you know, we feel for you. You know, it's always hard to see something you've put a bunch of labor into, you know, not do well. But you know, we're not giving you points for effort. We're giving you points for the end product that people are actually buying.
Well, I definitely see your point and agree. But there is a large portion of people, especially when it comes to the world of visual effects, that we look at blogs. Like, there's lots of blogs dedicated to the process of, you know, effects work, just cool directing work, any motion graphics stuff that's going on. And we like to keep, you know, on the inside info of the industry and stuff. So, I mean, people do find it fascinating, but yeah, maybe not worthy of an award for sure.
Right. I'm not saying that you know, technical achievement isn't something to be applauded. I mean, it's always cool to see them do something and see how they did something. That's very interesting.
Definitely.
But in terms of
like meriting something.
Watching the movie. The movie right. is the product they're trying to create, or the game. And
yeah, like if the movie isn't. Like, that's a good point, because if Evan doesn't like the movie and Logan doesn't like the movie, then ultimately their effects work sort of failed. Or not failed, but it didn't, you know, make the story enhanced or help the story at all. Or if it could at all, if the story sucks, but, you know. So maybe it doesn't deserve it, but who knows? But anyway.
I don't know. I can think of movies I like just for the effects, you know. And I thought Blade Runner, I didn't like that story. I mean, I know a lot of people did. Don't shoot me. Please don't slash my tires, whatever. I watch it for the visuals every single time. You know, I don't think it's an interesting story.
If anyone wants to slash Logan's tires, I can tell you where he parks.
So you didn't like that quest in Fallout 3 where you had to find the
replicant? You know. Although, okay, you know what I did like? I was very shocked. Punisher Warzone. Well, I know. Stop laughing. The first one sucked. It's horrible. I admit it, right? And so I knew that I thought this one was going to suck too, but I was sick. And, you know, I just
in
didn't.
The head.
I mean, there was just. It was the best I could do with the resources I had. And it turned out to be a great movie. It was fantastic. It was so violent. It wasn't even funny. And it left me so comfortably numb to everything going on in the world around me. I was just blown away. The acting was really good.
I saw the preview and it looked terrible.
No, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. It was a good movie. You're going to like it. And that's that.
Were you that guy in high school that wore a Punisher skull t-shirt?
No. I'm telling you. I didn't like it. Movie. I thought it was crap. It was crap. But this one was like, you know, it was just super earnest and super violent. Unbelievable. It had kind of like a weirdly lit end sequence, you know. It was a little bit Disneyland for me. But anyway, I thought it was great. And I'm going to move on before somebody can contradict me.
Or slashes his tires.
Yes, exactly. Oh, by the way, you have one more day. Ladies and gentlemen, one more day to bag Team Fortress 2 for half price, which is only $10 on Steam right now. Doesn't it end tomorrow?
I believe so. Yeah. Before the weekend. Ridiculous, you know, price.
So we are all trying to scrape together our change in these difficult times, and this is one way to do it. Because if you don't buy Team Fortress 2 for $10, then you're actually losing money.
you're actually throwing money away. Now, I actually really encourage people to go buy it because, for no other reason than Valve is experiencing a lot of success with these half price deals, and if they keep experiencing success with them, they'll keep doing them. So, So the more other people will emulate them. So the more success they have, the more copies they sell, the more likely they are to do it with the next game you really want to buy.
Support the machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a new WoW patch that's just hitting test servers right now. Is there not, Mr. Augustine?
That is very true. 3.1, it's a big deal.
Tell us about it.
Probably the biggest deal for most people is there's a new raid dungeon, Old War, because people were kind of complaining that there wasn't enough content in Wrath of Lich King. So this is the next big thing for people to tackle. There's tons and tons of class changes, like tweakings, nerfs, buffs, plenty for forum trolls to go crazy with. And new arena season, and my favorite thing, dual specs, where now you can have like two different talent specs. You can be a tank, but then you can switch anytime for free to like a DPS spec. So it should allow players, you know, more freedom, where if you're a tank, you know, you can go out and solo if you want to.
You can't switch on the fly though, right?
Yeah, you can. Actually, it's a 5-minute, I think it's the latest stats, like 5-minute cooldown, and it takes like 5 seconds to cast, but you can cast it anywhere in the world. Yeah.
Doesn't that like kind of remove all the incentive to specialize? I mean, that's something that kind of bugs me in RPGs when, you know, I've developed my character one way or the other, and then it makes it really easy to kind of invalidate all of that and switch to something else. Like in Fallout, one of the things that bugged Deathlock about it was that there were a bunch of clothes that give you bonuses to your stats, either your skills or your special stats. So you may have specialized your guy in being a small arms expert, small guns, but all of a sudden you've got a bunch of energy weapon skill. So you know you become a jack of all trades rather than a specialist.
Yeah, I think it's very different for a solo game than like a raid game, because this, you need tanks, you need healers, and a lot of times like your tank isn't on, and so you have 19 people sitting there and they can't do anything because, you know, this other guy isn't on. But this allows people to be more flexible, say, like, oh, Joe, you can, you know, become a tank by hitting this one button just for tonight. Will you do it so all of us can play together? So
but
it just
it's a 5-minute cooldown, so you can switch back and forth every 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, but yeah, you could. But I mean, if you need a tank for a whole run, they aren't going to keep switching back and forth. They'll become a tank for that night so that you guys can go play and have fun, and then they can go back to whatever spec they were before afterwards.
Aren't a lot of people going to be pissed off they went to all the trouble of creating an alt for that purpose, and all of a sudden it's invalidated?
No, I mean, there's not many people that have like an alt that's also geared out to do the raid dungeons, because you need really high gear, and so you're stuck with the one character usually. You can't bring in alts to, you know, progressive level content. So a lot of times, if there wasn't a tank on, you just couldn't play. And now this makes it easier for guilds to play instead of sitting around waiting for somebody to log on.
You know, Josh, you'd be really good on Nightline. Because, you know, your answers are always, you know, you're always ready, you know, for, you know, to, you know.
You'd also be good on To Catch a Predator.
Hopefully host. Just as the host, right?
You'd just be like, you'd be sitting in the
house.
Hey,
I know him.
Like with a big quaffed of wine in your hand. It's like 32-ounce wine glass, swirling it. Hello.
I love how he always comes out and like offers them a cookie. He's like, here, have some cookies.
No. Want some Kool-Aid? No thanks.
Well, the Ides of March are usually, you know, suggest something unpleasant is going to happen. However, we have something really, really pleasant coming up. It is the expansion for Command & Conquer, Red Alert 3, Uprising, which is going to be available via digital download from the EA downloader.
Stop saying that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I read it off.
you're perpetuating this terrible, terrible, redundant.
But you know what?
Phrase.
Maybe.
Do you want me to believe
maybe
that?
Maybe.
I would like.
It's just too late. What if it's too late?
It's
what
never
if
it, too
late. What if that cat is already out of the grammar bag?
We can stop this thing.
Have you ever tried to catch a cat that's like hysterical and running?
I have, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know how it's impossible. You can't. You have to wait till the cat chills out, and that's never going to happen. Download is already out there. What are you going to do? Huh?
Put it back in the damn bag.
And especially if that cat is actually a possum.
I am actually being over defensive because I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah.
Anyway, the most exciting part of this announcement, last week we weren't sure if multiplayer maps are coming. There are 30 new multiplayer maps coming.
Holy
Exactly. Close to double. I can't remember how many were in the original, but they're around that many in the first release. So that's great news for me, for someone that likes to play competitively but casually. And really cool kind of dungeon crawling campaign, a mission with Yuki, the Empire of the Rising Sun commando character that we got a look at last month. So yeah, definitely looking forward to it.
This is standalone, right?
It is, and yep. It's also $20, which is cool. Which, you know, we talked about it a little bit a week or two ago, how it's download only, and that's saving EA. That's allowing them to offer it for cheaper. You know, if it was at retail, it'd probably be $30
because that's they have a trend I like.
Yeah, because they would have to pay to print out the boxes and the manuals and press the discs and do all that business. But now they can, you know, skimp on the costs of actually producing it, so that you get to buy it cheaper. They're passing the savings along to you
through digital downloads.
I hate.
Oh! You. Wait, wasn't there some sort of what were we supposed to say? Just downloads or.
Digital distribution, for example.
Digital distribution, that's right. That's an extra syllable. That's a lot of
effort.
What's
wrong with digital downloads?
Or just downloadable content.
How many downloads have you ever done that are not digital?
Well, I've downloaded some analog stuff in my day.
Somebody calls you on the phone and says 1-0-0-0-1-1-1-0.
That's still digital, in a way.
But they're doing it over analog, I guess. Okay. Yeah, it is still digital, yeah.
Or like there's a super long spool of magnetic tape. There's one spool at one end and one at the other end, and you just reel the other end in. That's
an
analog download. Oh, man.
That's so, you know what? That's really steampunk. I like that.
Okay.
All right. It will be soon available via digital distribution from the EA Downloader on Thursday, March 12th. Be there.
It'll probably end up on Steam as well.
Let's take some questions. That would be fantastic.
This is Ian, and I'm curious as to why many games are offered through Steam, but not absolutely all of them. One example of a game that isn't offered through Steam is Sins of the Solar Empire, and I want to know why. If it's Valve's decision to offer a game through their service, why is one as popular as Sins of the Solar Empire not offered? There are others, too, that aren't offered, of course, like King's Bounty, The Legend. Again, why? That's all. Thanks.
How many of us have raised our fist to the sky and said, why?
Well, in this case, that's a very easy question to answer, because Sins of a Solar Empire is published by Stardock, who owns Impulse. So they're using Sins of a Solar Empire as an incentive for you to get Impulse. Impulse is a competitor to Steam. You know, they have a bunch of games on there that you can get. You can get, like, Supreme Commander on there. They just added a few more. They have, like, at least a bunch of THQ games, and I think some 2K games as well. It's the bait, basically, to get you onto to Impulse. And Impulse is an up and coming service. I recommend checking
terrific.
It out.
Yeah. And there's considerable overlap on the two services.
Oh yeah, yeah. But in terms of why isn't everything on Steam? It's because the publishers of those games just haven't decided to put them on Steam yet. For a long time, EA hadn't made the plunge, and still not all of their stuff is on there. They're, you know, it's kind of a testing the waters to see how big a success it would be, if it's worth their effort to put it on there. And you know, so far I think they, based on the fact they have been putting more and more on there, that it has been successful. So it's a publisher decision. It's not Valve saying we don't want that on Steam. They want everything on Steam.
Yeah,
But it's getting people to agree to put stuff on Steam that is the holdup.
And hey, a little competition never hurt the industry, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we need people like we need people like Stardock and Impulse to drive Steam to keep improving.
And this, at the end of the month, March 31st, Jonathan Blow's Braid will be available on Steam and Impulse, and it will be 4 cents cheaper on Impulse. You heard it here from PC Gamer Podcast first.
Whoa.
Now you know. And you want to buy that. I order you to buy it. I do not want to hear any argument because it's awesome.
He brings up a good point philosophically, though. Like, why aren't all games available for digital distribution?
Because some people are just too—they haven't jumped on the bandwagon yet.
Yeah,
You just wanted to say digital distribution to kiss up Stapleton.
I almost slipped.
That's my guess. Was it halting? Let's take another question.
Hi, it's Sebastian from Vancouver, British Columbia. I was just wondering, because you were talking about this in a couple podcasts recently about EVE Online. It's only got one server for 50,000 people. What do you think, how powerful would it be? Like how much RAM and stuff would it have? Just interesting, because that's a lot of people to be hosting with one server. Thanks. Bye. Love the podcast.
Well, I know EVE Online, for one thing, it's sort of segmented. It's modular in that you're jumping between systems, and those systems sort of have their own server queues. The way I understand it, if there's X amount of people in a system, it'll start to lag, but it's not really... I mean, you're not walking between...
So what you're saying is that calling it all in one server is kind of a misnomer. It's not actually one server. It's a bunch of servers, but they're all linked together so that you can jump between one between at will.
Systems are sort of rendered as levels, I guess, is the good way of putting it. So,
do they refer to those as shards? Is that...
I think that's a different expression.
That a different thing altogether? Okay, all right.
But that would be a good question. I mean, I'd imagine it'd still have to be a pretty substantial piece of hardware to take care of all that information at once.
By the way, Sebastian is... All people named Sebastian are awesome. I just want to say that. Let's take another question.
Hey, PC Gamer team. This is Jules from Connecticut. One of them passed on a couple of comments. One was, I totally agree with Andy Bowman about the Far Cry 2 game. I felt it was a lost opportunity with the fact that whenever you went through a checkpoint, that they always considered you as a bad guy. There was none of that suspense that you get from the intro movie. I think that sort of marred what could have potentially been quite a great game. Second thing is, why does PC Gamer US not cover Empire Total War on their podcast and talk about it as much as you talk about other games? We'd really appreciate a balance on those type of strategy games. You've made recommendations for strategy games in the past, but never mention it. It's coming out next week, and I think it's going to be amazing. We'd appreciate a balanced approach. Thanks very much. Bye.
Hey, Andy, can you bleep out Empire Total War in this question? You don't have to erase the whole question, just that part.
Yeah.
Now, the reason we don't generally talk about it that much is because none of us is really a big Total War player. And we have talked about it to some extent. And it does get a lot of coverage in the magazine because we collaborate with the UK guys a lot on that. And they're huge fans. So, it's just a matter of, you know, what our personal tastes are, frankly. I haven't spent a whole lot of time with the Total War series, although I do plan to play Empire Total War. I played a little bit of the demo far. I was enjoying it. So I'm looking forward to the release of the game. So maybe next week we'll talk about it a little bit more.
And speaking for myself,
Evan, I was speaking for you.
Yes, as is the custom. I'm terrified of things like unit formations, like taxing and managing all this crazy political stuff when I just want to click some units around. Like, that's hard enough for me to deal with.
I mean, you can just play that aspect of it. You know, there are a bunch of battles in there that are pre-set up, and you can just go in and play those scenarios without playing the turn-based mode of it if you want. And vice versa, you can auto-resolve all of the battles if you just want to play the turn-based game.
Are the battles that are set up? I don't know much about the Total War series. Are those like historical battles that they set up that you're replaying, or just kind of random ones?
Many of them are reenactments of historical battles. Yes.
That is awesome.
You know, the basic answer is fear.
Yeah.
I'd say that, yeah.
I actually refuse to admit the Revolutionary War ever happened, so.
Yeah.
Evan, you're not even British.
Evan considers himself a British citizen.
You're still a loyalist, aren't you?
Okay.
Anyway,
every one of his emails at the end, it says, God save the Queen.
all I'm saying is, when's the last time somebody dug up a red coat skeleton in, like, Virginia or something? Never happened, you know?
Evan also demands to be paid in pounds.
I'm sure the revolution never happened.
He does drink an alarming amount of tea.
I've heard of a Holocaust denier. I've never heard of a revolution denier. Okay.
I did want to touch back on to the beginning of his question, where he was talking about Far Cry 2. And I think I pretty much resigned out of the game for good. But I did read an interesting thing about about it on GamesRadar where they were saying if you look at it more like a big giant Splinter Cell level, the whole world as a Splinter Cell level, and you sneak around and stuff instead of just driving straight through the roads and getting into the firefights that way, where you sort of maybe sneak around to your targets and take a really slow pace, which, to be honest, doesn't seem that appealing because it is a big world, and to get to where you have to blow up the truck or whatever you have to do could take forever, but maybe that could save the game. I don't know if I'm going to go
back. Why don't you give that a shot and let us know next week how
That's actually how I played it. I played it as a sniper, and I'd try and sneak around and stuff, and I really enjoyed it, but like Andy said, I mean, it just takes forever. I just kind of got tired after a while because it just takes forever to get anywhere. But it is, I really like that sort of combat, and it played very well.
You know, I can't think of a single shooter where you can pick up a handful of dirt and throw it in somebody's face to temporarily blind them. Is there anyone that has done that before? Hmm. You should be able to.
I seem to recall a QuickTime event of that happening.
A few fighting games have that.
Mm. Yeah.
Characters, but
QuickTime events don't count.
Okay.
Uh-oh. You started him. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. We've begun our descent into Turkish airspace, so we're being asked to wrap the podcast. So let's slip in our playlist before we buckle up. Mr. Stapleton, what have you been playing lately?
I've been playing a lot of Dawn of War 2, mostly the single-player campaign, because the multiplayer has been kind of intimidating me in that I've said in the past that playing the single-player is not, like, proper preparation to really go online and play. But it helps because I have no idea how to play as the Tyranids, the Orcs, or the Eldar. Really, I've been watching some replays though, and I'm starting to get some ideas of how to handle things. But I've been sticking to the single player campaign for the most part, and I've been enjoying it a lot too. The fiction is not really my thing. I tend to hit escape through all of the dialogue because it's really kind of laborious to listen to sometimes. But just getting different war gear sets and different, spending my RPG character progression points differently, specializing my troops differently, taking different squads on missions, and it has opened up a lot of new tactical possibilities that I find very interesting. Yeah. And in addition to that, Sins of a Solar Empire Entrenchment came out yesterday. So I've actually not gotten a chance to play that much, but that's what I'll be playing tonight.
Mr. Lottie, what have you been playing?
Yeah, per my contractual obligation, invested a bunch of time into the Scout update. Not terribly impressed with the new maps. I'll leave it at that before it degenerates into a larger discussion. But putting a whole lot more time into Counter-Strike Source, coming back to that, there's really something to be said for a game that endorses camping. Like, I know it sounds weird, but it promotes this kind of this interesting sense of pace, and there's a lot of novelty in other players and their experiences, and I'm finding there's a really good community for it now, and less of the people that you'd sort of find traditionally on Xbox Live or away from the game. It's really just the veterans and people that play it for fun that are out there now, seemingly. That's what I'm finding. So it's good.
Like any game with a sniper rifle in it is promoting camping, in my view. I mean, and if you don't, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I only play on servers that have the AWP banned, so there's no one-shot kills usually. Though there are a ton of headshots still.
Aren't headshots one-shot kills?
It depends on the quality of the weapon, if you've equipped a helmet, if you bought a helmet, which can protect you in some cases.
Well, I have been disporting myself on Braid all month, and it's just, it keeps giving and giving and giving. I'm just delighted that it's everything that everybody I know who's got an Xbox has said it would. I don't have an Xbox myself. I'm just not into that sort of thing. And it's very much a terrific gaming experience, which I don't hesitate to recommend. Mr. Augustine, what about you? What have you been up to last week?
I have not gone to bed since 2 a.m., or before 2 a.m. since the last podcast, but I'm happy to report that I did save the galaxy again, this time from evil computers, Reapers. Yeah, so I've just been playing Mass Effect, finished it, I totally loved it. I've also been playing a lot of Tabula Rasa because the servers go down on Saturday, And there's a lot of people, but you can actually reach max level in about a day, they said, because they gave out things that increase experience gain by like 20,000% or something. So I'm trying to hit max level because if I hit 50, I can try out the mechs before the servers go down. So I'm trying to hit 50 before the servers go down on Saturday.
I really hope that when they shut down Tabula Rasa or any MMO, they just set like a block of C4 with a timer and they have to escape the building and run out, like jump out the windows. We're destroying the world. Run.
How about our podcast producer, Andy Bauman?
So, like a year ago, when people would say things like, oh, I'm really glad this game was only 5 hours because I enjoyed it, I would get really upset and be like, oh, you're such a noob. You know, like, but it's incredible how much busier you can be, you know, in 1 year. So Mirror's Edge was like the best gaming experience I've had in a while. And I thought I played it for like 10 hours, but I looked back at the time and it was only 5.5 hours or something. And I was like, oh. But it was a glorious 5.5 hours. I really liked Mirror's Edge.
Fantastic. Yeah. You know what? I still haven't played it, so I have to get back on there. I haven't finished it.
Cool. Yeah, and you know, shoot people. Don't be afraid to use the guns.
You know what? That's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to walk away from that game feeling absolutely comfortably numb.
I was totally comfortably numb, like sliding on the floor, owning some bitches with the machine gun. Comfortably numb.
Yes. To quote Limp Bizkit, you got to have faith.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
You're going to get some hate mail from George Michael fans.
Well, the seatbelt light is on now, so before we go, allow me to remind listeners to send us your questions in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your question there. Keep it short and clean, or we'll make you sorry that you didn't. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to pcgamer.com and clicking that sweet little button on the left side of the screen that says subscribe. We're also looking for your coolest screenshots and photos of gaming rigs we wouldn't believe unless we saw them for ourselves. Send them to letters@pcgamer.com, and you just might see your handiwork in the world-famous PC Gamer Letters section. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together with all of you again next week. Let's take another question. Whoa! We were just programmed.
It's coded. We've been getting a few like that. I wonder what that is. Like they.
Why do I suddenly crave Baskin Robbins?
Like they hang up or something. I don't know. We could call him back right now. I have his phone number.
Let's not.
That would be fun one time to like call somebody.
Another mom answer.
and then be on. How to Catch a Predator.
We'll call them and ask why.
Oh my gosh.
We'll call them and ask why they aren't at school or work.
You know, I'm taking Spanish right now, and I've discovered a really good way to practice is by reading the Spanish spam we get in our letters inbox. El más fabuloso compilado de sexo ya más visto.
Ay, ay, ay.
Whoa. Yeah, I know. I hope I didn't say anything horrible, but
caliente.
Yeah. Learning a language is very hard, by the way.
Logan describes anything that contains sugar, bread, or what else, Logan?
Fat.
Okay, yeah. Basically, all food is yak to Logan.
Oh.
That's because it is extracted from the anus of a yak.
But it's flavorful.
Which is something not many people know. Except for employees of Future US and its divisions.
Yeah, flavor actually falls under the yak category, apparently.
Wow.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
I'm a yak connoisseur.
That was weird. I had Dan on an audio loop with two words. It was crazy.
What were the two words?
No, it was in the middle of one word going to the other one, so it sounded like our Jeep. Our Jeep, our Jeep, our Jeep, our Jeep. It kept going on and on while he was talking. And I was watching his lips move. in his mouth, and I heard his voice, but they weren't syncing. It was like a badly dubbed movie.
You were watching my lips move, but my back is to
you. No, you weren't. You were sort of angled, so I could see your jaw moving, and you were like, rrr, rrr, rrr.
Right.
I think you like just you know? Just experience evidence of that the Matrix exists, I think.
Yes, yeah. There was a glitch.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the same cat? Are you sure? I had a weird dream where I was being chased down a concrete spiral staircase, but it was edited like an action movie. And it was such a cool sequence in the dream, like, because it was like a minute and a half chase, that in the dream I actually rewound and watched it again. Isn't that weird?
That's pretty sweet.
It was crazy. I mean, I remember thinking in the dream that was amazing, and then I went back to the start and replayed the whole thing again and watched it again.
So you have some kind of dream vo.
Exactly. That was brilliant. Yes, and I was in the dream when it replayed, you know? So it was like I replayed the same segment twice because I thought it was awesome.